same event?
I'm not sure. It's from the Elizabeth Warren event.
College or something? It was not a...
Yeah, I don't think this was...
This was Elizabeth... Oh, this is just like legitimate.
Live from GPB News, this is Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nigut. Election Day is just 3 weeks off, but if recent history's a guide, by then, more than half of Georgia voters may already have cast their ballots. Our panel looks at how early voting may shape the outcome of races across the state. A new report reveals that lobbyists at the state capitol have rallied around Brian Kemp, betting with their campaign dollars he'll be Georgia's next governor. Stacey Abrams makes the rounds of the national Sunday political shows and charges that Kemp has engaged in practices designed to suppress minority votes. Plus, did David Perdue's temper get the best of him when a Georgia Tech student tried to ask him a question during Perdue's visit to the Tech campus? We'll have audio of the incident. The AJC's Jim Galloway and our panel join me after the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump are spending the next few hours in Florida and Georgia being briefed on the hurricane recovery. At Eglin Air Force Base this afternoon, Trump applauded what's been done so far.
The job they've done in Florida has been incredible, and likewise, I'm hearing in Georgia very good things.
Last week, Hurricane Michael roared ashore in Florida's panhandle as a destructive Category 4 storm with 155-mile-per-hour winds. It leveled neighborhoods. Mexico Beach, population of 1,000, was nearly wiped out. The hurricane wreaked havoc in four states from Florida to Virginia. It killed at least 17 people. A team of Turkish and Saudi investigators is searching the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, Turkey, the scene of the disappearance and alleged murder of a Saudi journalist earlier this month. NPR's Peter Kenny reports Saudi officials continue to deny any involvement in the journalist's disappearance.
In the morning, Turkish officials announced their intention to search the consulate, as well as the Saudi consul general's residence and diplomatic vehicles, but the search didn't begin until after dark. Turkish investigators have claimed that journalist Jamal Khashoggi was killed inside the consulate on October 2nd and his body disposed of. Saudi officials reject the allegations. Investigators have focused on the arrival of 15 Saudis to Istanbul on the day Khashoggi disappeared. The men departed the same day. Saudi officials say Khashoggi left the consulate within an hour of arriving, but have provided no evidence to back up that claim. Peter Kenyon, NPR News, Istanbul.
The Russian Orthodox Church is breaking ties with the head of the global Orthodox community after the Ecumenical Patriarchate of Constantinople decided to grant Ukrainian clerics independence from the church in Moscow for the first time in hundreds of years. Since Russia annexed Crimea from Ukraine in 2014, calls for the Ukrainian church's independence have intensified. Strong winds and dry conditions have prompted Pacific Gas and Electric for the first time to shut off electricity for some of its customers to prevent wildfires in parts of Northern California. From member station KQED in San Francisco, Ted Goldberg has an update.
PG&E has turned off power for some 59,000 customers in three counties north of San Francisco and three other counties in the Sierra foothills. The proactive electricity shutoffs led some school districts to cancel classes for the day. PG&E, which is the largest utility provider in Northern California, says the move is in the interest of safety and a last resort due to extreme weather conditions. The National Weather Service says wind speeds reached 77 miles per hour at two locations in the northern part of the Bay Area on Sunday evening. Over the summer, Cal Fire announced that PG&E's electrical infrastructure caused at least a dozen fires in six counties last October. For NPR News, I'm Ted Goldberg in San Francisco.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 47 points. This is NPR News.
Live from the GPB Newsroom, good afternoon. I'm Drew Dawson. Just ahead, it's Political Rewind with Bill Nigut. But first in GPB News, the incoming general manager of Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport goes before the Atlanta City Council today. John Selden is the former deputy general manager at New York's JFK Airport. The City Council's Transportation Committee has already given its unanimous approval to Selden's appointment. This after hearings in which he highlighted the importance of transparency and integrity in the procurement process. Selden told the AJC that his goals include ensuring that Hartsfield-Jackson remains the world's busiest airport and maintains its efficiency, which he says translates into airline profits and more airline service in Atlanta. A nonprofit is hoping to help end the opioid epidemic here in Georgia. GPB's Ellen Eldridge reports.
The Addiction Policy Forum vets treatment facilities and providers before adding them to its database. The idea? To create an easy-to-navigate website for those struggling with addiction and their loved ones. Danielle Torino is with the forum.
It's for moms and dads in the middle of the night that have no place else to turn and have called 20 places and keep getting turned down because they don't know the right information.
People can also call their helpline to connect with treatment resources in their Georgia County. For GPB News, I'm Ellen Eldridge in Atlanta.
In sports, the Atlanta Falcons snapped their three-game losing streak yesterday with a 34-29 win over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Falcons play the Giants next Monday night. For more Georgia news, go to gpbnews.org.
Support for NPR comes from the Alliance for Lifetime Income, a nonprofit composed of financial services organizations working to educate Americans about options for securing protected lifetime income in retirement. More at allianceforlifetimeincome.org.
Hey, welcome to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nigut. Glad to have you with us for today's show. Before I introduce panel, a couple of quick announcements. Number one, we're really looking forward tonight here in Atlanta. We're going to record Rewind in front of a live audience, and we've got a big crowd coming. And I just want you to know, if you're out there listening to the show today and are showing up tonight, Jim Galloway, we're looking forward to getting to see everybody, yes?
Yeah, we got this is the double feature.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And of course, we'll air that show tomorrow at 2 o'clock. And again, as I've mentioned a number of times, if you're down in the Savannah area, we'll be down your way on October 30th, 7 o'clock at night. We'd love to have you join us. Our partnership with the Coastal League of Women Voters is allowing us to come down and be with you all. Just go to gpb.org/community and sign up for your free ticket there. Also, I want to thank you for all the comments you posted on Facebook, both good and critical of our conversation with Stacey Abrams, which we aired live on Friday and then broadcast on TV yesterday. And people continue to say, why aren't you going to interview Brian Kemp? And we want to. We just need the Kemp campaign to tell us that they want to bring him in sometime before the election. All right, let's get started. Jim Galloway, lead political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, with us. How are you, Jim?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. This cooler weather is helping.
Oh, man, it's nice. But you know what? We were just talking before we went on the air with the rest of the folks who I'll introduce in a second. It's exhausting right now staying on top of politics. There's just so much happening.
Oh, look, you've got a David Perdue on the tech campus on Saturday. You've got Stacey Abrams at a gay pride parade on Sunday. And then Brian Kemp erupting this morning. It just doesn't stop.
Yeah. President's coming to Warner Robins, going to land at Warner Robins about 5:30, 6 o'clock, and then go tour hurricane damage in Southwest Georgia. So you're right. We got a lot to talk about. One of the people who's joining us to do that, Jordan Fuchs from Landmark Communications. We're really glad you're back for the show today.
Thank you for having me.
And a little bit later, you've got some really interesting information that you're going to share with us about early voting, right?
Yes, I have numbers from as of Friday,
right,
the early voting numbers from what is going on.
All right now. Don't give it away yet. We're teasing ahead today. Cesar Mitchell, former president of the Atlanta City Council, back in front of our microphone. Glad to have you here, Cesar.
It's great to be here, and I'm loving the fall weather. Oh, sticks.
Yeah. And right next to you, Heath Garrett, Republican strategist. Glad to have you back, Heath.
It's great to be here on a Monday with all these great Americans.
Yeah. All right. So let's get started. We are going to talk about early voting because it actually began today. The numbers that I should have said, you were talking about absentee ballots, I assume, from
mail-in ballots.
Mail-in ballots. All right. But early voting at locations around the state began this morning. And we'll get to that in a little while. But there's a story, Jim, that's come up that's really pushed that a little bit further down in our rundown. And I want to give you the chance to set it up. Last week, Stacey Abrams at a rally made remarks about what she considers to represent the blue wave in Georgia.
It was an extended rift on who belongs and who, and and inclusiveness. And, you know, cops were in there, and the LGBTQ community was in there, and undocumented people were in there.
So let's start. Stephen Fowler, reporter here at GPB News, was at the event. It was when Abrams appeared with Elizabeth Warren and Ayanna Pressley late last week on last Tuesday. And let's just listen to a little of what she said, because the Kemp campaign has jumped all over this in a way that is potentially pretty effective for them. But let's listen first to Abrams.
We are 28 days from real change.
Yeah. 28 days.
28 days before we tell Georgia who we are.
Yes.
And when we change Georgia, we change the South.
Yeah.
And when we change the South, we change America.
Yeah.
And that change starts right here.
Yes.
Because the thing of it is, blue waves aren't blue. That's what we use, because that's the color that we embrace.
Right.
But the thing of it is, a blue wave is African American.
Yeah.
It's white, it's Latino, it's Asian Pacific Islander.
Yes.
It is disabled.
Yes.
It is differently abled.
Yes.
It is LGBTQ.
Yes.
It is law enforcement.
Yes.
It is veterans.
Yes.
It is made up of those who've been told that they are not worthy of being here.
Yes.
It is comprised of those who are documented and undocumented.
Yes.
It's made up of those who've been told they are successful and those who've been told they are left behind.
Yes.
But the real wave is when we come together and we tell Georgia, we're here and we're not going anywhere.
Yes.
All right, Jim. So it was a pretty broad, sweeping statement about all the people who she thinks are supportive of a democratic change in Georgia.
Right? There you go. Right.
Pretty much that was it.
No. Then Brian Kemp got on Fox and Friends.
Yeah. Let's listen to what Brian Kemp said and what his campaign since last Tuesday has been saying about those remarks.
It means she wants the illegals to vote in Georgia. I mean, this is a shocking development in the campaign. While she was campaigning with Elizabeth Warren, she actually said this. Her network of groups actually filed a lawsuit that says the same thing in the lawsuit. And look, early voting starts in Georgia today. I think hardworking Georgians who, should decide who their governor is, not people here illegally like my opponent wants.
Yeah, but your Secretary of State, it's not legal to, if you're in the country illegally, to vote, is it?
No, absolutely. It's against the law and it's against the Constitution, which makes it even more shocking that she would say that. But when you file a lawsuit, she's trying to get a pick of a liberal judge that will just make a ruling to order this. That's what the lawsuit's asking. That's why this is so extreme and a radical position, quite honestly, for my opponent. It's not just her saying this, mm-hmm. but her groups that support her that she helped create that have filed a lawsuit.
Let's say, Jim, let's make clear, first of all, the lawsuit that he's talking about. There are about 2,000 of the people in that group of, I think, 53,000 who are
naturalized citizens and are having to prove that citizenship time and time again. Otherwise, what he's saying in that's in the lawsuit is not true.
All right, so let me throw it out. Heath, let's just start with you,
sure.
Because Kemp is your candidate, obviously, for governor.
Absolutely.
What do we make? I mean, look, all is fair in the last few weeks of a campaign, but is this not a stretch to say that she's trying to get undocumented the right to vote, or that she's going to try to somehow get them to the polls without having the right to vote?
Well, it's not too far of a stretch, right? At the end of the day, she said, and it was good political rhetoric, right? I guess actually the most fired up I've heard Stacey be recorded doing, but she did slip in there that she thinks part of the blue wave is undocumented folks. It implied if she's thinking about voting. I think this gave Kemp campaign an opportunity to highlight why we have voter ID laws and why we're doing things to make sure that there's no fraud and people are voting in the right places all around the state. It also gave him a lifeline with the other controversies going on. Again, Stacey's manufactured crisis around these 53,000 folks I know we're talking about. So I think both campaigns are taking a little bit of license here with these issues, but it gave Kemp an opportunity to point out to his base that she's trying to find folks to vote.
Caesar, I didn't hear a word about, hey, you undocumented Georgians, go to the polls and sneak in and cast a ballot for me.
I didn't hear that either. And, Brian was on Fox and Friends. He had to say something that would kind of stoke his base and really satisfy the network. But I'll say this: I think Stacey and I agree with Heath. I mean, that was a very impassioned speech. And I think she's really fired up, and she's really on the trail in a very hard way now. What I will say is I think she was speaking to Georgians. And just because you may be undocumented, I guess that doesn't mean you can't go out and campaign and raise your voice. But I also think what she's talking about is this is about representing people and people who are here in the state of Georgia. And so I don't think she was putting out a clarion call for all undocumented folks who are not eligible to vote to go and vote. I don't think she's counting them in the numbers. I think there's no one else probably more adept as it relates to who's on the ballot, who's on the voter rolls in Stacey Abrams.
Jordan, it's interesting to hear Caesar say he went on Fox and Friends, so he had to have something to say. I doubt that his appearance on Fox this morning was coincidental to the message they've been putting out this weekend about Stacey is trying to get undocumented to the polls.
Right. I think this is absolutely planned. Yeah. It's a nice soundbite, and everybody is appealing to their bases. So it's not necessarily an argument that I'm shocked by. But Abrams is quite clearly running an identity politics campaign. And even I was driving through Johns Creek today where I saw Asians for Abrams. And so historically, when you have that line of thought in a campaign, it's nice. It doesn't necessarily work in Georgia. It truly is about the issues at the end of the
day.
Why
do you think it doesn't work in Georgia?
Well, Heath, how about you help me out there?
Well, I would say it works if you constantly use the phrase hardworking Georgians. Does it not?
Talking about a Republican, in other words, appealing to the Republican base,
identity politics works here.
I mean, identity politics is everything. That's what politics is right now. It's all about tribalism. I've said that 1,000 times, and I'll continue to say that. I think, Stacey is going to continue to encourage folks who she says have not been involved in the political process to get involved. And this issue of 53,000 people not being eligible to vote or potentially at risk of not being able to vote is an issue that not only I think it's important for her to bring up, given kind of where she's stood over the last several years, but I think it's absolutely necessary
right,
for her to bring it up.
But I do want to be careful about that. The 53,000, this is all part of the exact match statute, which the legislature passed, I think, 2 sessions ago. If you have one letter misspelled if you're inversed a couple letters, if your address is a number off, whatever, you have to have an exact match to automatically be able to cast your ballot. But I think the Abrams campaign, we have to say, in their own way, they've taken advantage of this to get out their message, because those 53,000 people will be allowed to go to the polls with identification, and they will be allowed to cast a ballot. Now, it's true that it's a provisional ballot, but in fact, if you're the Abrams people, Jim, you might be a little worried that on one hand you're saying voter suppression, and the other saying, but go to the polls, make sure you vote.
Right. But I mean, a provisional ballot is different from a regular ballot, because you file that ballot and then you have 3 days to go back and resolve everything that would allow you to have that ballot counted. Now, some people won't go through that process. Some people will be frightened away by that process. Heath, I got to take issue with you. You called this a manufactured issue, and you're right, it is. But it was something that Republican lawmakers made up in February of 2017, because it was a reaction to a settlement that Kemp had entered into, and 9 days later they passed legislation to undo that settlement.
Yeah, the part of the manufacturing crisis is she's trying to imply that there's a cabal out there, which is not there, trying to keep people from voting who are otherwise eligible to vote. And this law does provide the right provision for it. It's set up because, partially because of Stacey Abrams' own group, whose canvassers submitted thousands upon thousands of fraudulent and poorly filled out voter registration forms over the last 3 or 4 years. Some of that's still under investigation. So the reason why we have exact match is to make sure that people aren't trying to fraudulently register to vote and vote in the wrong precinct or the wrong county or either undocumented or illegal, and make sure that that's being done correctly. We all should be for a transparent and open and get everybody to the polls and vote. But it's manufacturers, and again, it's using identity politics. What she's trying to do here is put fear into people of color that there's some group out there that's going to try to prevent them from voting at the polls, and they need to come rectify that situation when it's been decades in the state of Georgia. I think we're much more further along in that, and nobody's trying to.
No, I mean, respectfully, my good friend.
I think we ought to talk about this, right? We talked about tribal politics, and that's what she's trying to imply here.
Well, I think it's at play, and I think it's at play on both sides.
I agree.
You can go to any race around the country, and you're going to see this kind of politics at play. But I think we should be careful not to say that she's, or her organization did anything fraudulent. I think if there's an investigation, that's fine. If there was some stuff that was done that was sloppy, it's got to be corrected, obviously. But here's the thing about suppression, which I think, probably everyone at this table would not necessarily identify with. But if you receive a notice in the mail that says, really, you may not be able to vote unless you do X, Y, and Z. The fact that you get a notice that says that is in and of itself the first step of suppression, quite frankly, because you're going to be thinking, if you're not a regular voter, or if you're someone who has historically seen your right to vote or your mother's right to vote or your grandmother's right to vote taken away, something's going to switch in your brain and you're going to think, well, maybe I just don't need to fool with it. And I think that's at play when you get a notice like that. When a notice didn't have to go, you have to go to the poll, to the precinct, and handle all that when you're getting ready to vote with your license and all that. So why get a notice saying you can't vote or you may not be able to vote? You'll find out once you get there.
I think it's fascinating, Jordan, that both of these issues, the allegations of voter suppression, which the Abrams campaign, Stacey on our show on Friday talked about it, and on the other hand, side of this, this thing we're talking about with Brian Kemp saying that Stacey Abrams is trying to get undocumented to the polls, these are playing out as huge national stories. The conservative media is really picking up on the Stacey Abrams wants undocumented to vote. The liberal media, I mean, all over national media, you're seeing these stories pop up about Georgia has a state that is actively trying to suppress votes. And it's playing out on a national plane right now.
Right. And it's just simply not true. And if you have registered and your ID doesn't match the name what's on the form, you can still vote on the day of the election. Yeah, so this is kind of a feigned issue.
You know what? What I'm seeing is on both sides, and Heath, I would invite you to jump in here too. I see both candidates kind of adapting to the decline of statewide media in Georgia.
Right.
No, I think that's
in that,
exactly
in that,
right.
In that, the AJC is doing its very best, but it doesn't have as many bodies as it used to throw at a gubernatorial campaign. The same is certainly true for every other newspaper and most TV stations. And you've got Stacey Abrams, who on Sunday went to meet the press,
yep.
Went to CNN.
Yep.
Of course, and we've already mentioned Brian Kemp going to Fox and Friends, all to reach their people via cable news.
And Fox and Friends on Sunday certainly didn't have Stacey Abrams on, but they did do a story about Stacey Abrams encouraging undocumented. They played a little piece of the sound that we shared with you that Stephen Fowler got at the rally. They played an edited version of it, and they hit upon, Heath, this theme that she's trying to encourage undocumented to vote.
No, I think that's exactly right. I think this tells us three things, Jim and Bill. I think, number one, it does say this is a nationalized election around the country. And folks, that because of the House of Representatives, because of the historic nature of Stacey Abrams, because of the balance of power, and because of the Trump effect, both pro and con on voters, I think that's why we're getting national coverage. I do think the lack of full-bodied journalists at the local newspapers, starting with the AJC all the way down, covering statewide politics is a big deal. And I do think, look, my call about this is we talk a lot on this show and others about when Republicans are potentially using rhetoric that kind of divides the country. And that's what I want to point out. I agree it's both sides. I wish candidates, both Republican and Democrats, we stop doing this. We don't need young African-Americans or young Hispanic individuals thinking that this is still 1960s Georgia, because it's not. It's a completely different. So I'm very sensitive to anything that comes across trying to divide in that regard, just like I think we got to be careful when we talk about not letting undocumented, folks vote. We need to make sure they know they're welcome in our state and that they have a role in our society and economy. But there is a line. You've got to become legal in order to vote and do those kind of things. But both sides of rhetoric, we've got to be really careful here, because Caesar and I want to live in a world 30, 40 years from now in Georgia where we're not still debating this, right? We're the first part of a post-desegregation generation, right, that I think can make things better, but we're still talking like we're living in the 60s when we're living in 2018. And things aren't perfect. We got a long way to go, but our politicians have got to be more responsible about this, but on both sides, in my opinion.
Well, you know, one thing, and I agree with Heath and everything he's just said, but if I were Brian Kemp, I actually would probably be encouraging people to vote and really talking about the work that his office has done over the years in terms of providing greater access to the polls.
And they do have, we've talked about this on the show, they have done a good job in finding way, mobile registration, that sort of thing, DDS registration. So it's interesting what you're saying, Caesar.
Yeah. Maybe his advisors are telling him, if he starts really encouraging every Georgian to go out and vote, that it may sound a little bit too progressive, but I think that's something he should really be heralding.
But I think he is. I don't hear him saying don't go and vote. I don't hear that from his campaign. What really is interesting here is that he is allowing folks to vote, and he is doing his job. And y'all have manufactured an issue that isn't true. And so he's having to combat that.
Yeah, because I think I've heard a commercial, or if it wasn't done directly by him, where he talks about voting. But I think he should really lean in on encouraging people to vote and kind of get off of the defensive on this.
Jim, I hear all this, and I wonder if in some ways Republicans are not reaping what they sowed. Republicans over the past decade here and across the country have looked at ways to make it harder and harder to go to the polls and vote. Now, they claim that's because they want to stop voter fraud. But photo ID, for instance, hugely controversial when it first came on the scene a number of years ago. Why do I have to have a driver's license to show up and vote? Doesn't that disadvantage people who don't have driver's licenses? Don't they tend to be a minority potential voter? In some ways, Republicans may think they're doing this for ballot security, but it does lead to a place where Democrats can challenge them on these issues.
Well, we've got two lawyers here at the table here. And, okay, was it Edmund Burke who said better that that 10 men go free than one man be convicted unjustly? Well, we've got a flip of the philosophy here. We've got Republicans accepting of a certain amount of collateral damage in order to make sure that no improper vote is cast, and I think that's an interesting turn of philosophy that you can question 53,000. Registered people who want to register to vote in order to keep an election secure, and I think there's got to be some adjustment to that.
And some of this, I think, has been out of political expediency, and I'll even say laziness on the Republicans' part. We've never been as good at grassroots, at least in the modern era, as our Democratic counterparts. And the truth is that the largest percentage of either low propensity voters or non-registered voters in the state of Georgia are rural white voters, right, who in theory would lean Republican in a lot of ways based upon the way we dice modern politics. And so I think Caesar is on to something. Republicans do take this collateral damage, Jim, and they don't flip it back the way Caesar was recommending, or maybe Jordan was too, is that we need to be talking about, we want every qualified individual to come and vote, and we want to get them registered, but we don't own that as Republicans, and it's absolutely part of the message that would help mitigate that.
All right, we got to get our first break of the show out of the way. So, Heath, you got the last word in that segment. You're listening to Political Rewind. We'll be right back. We're looking forward to Jordan sharing with us some of the numbers she has on people who've already voted. This is Political Rewind.
Peter Sagal here, and if you're in your car, I want you to try something. Roll up the windows, you're all sealed inside, take a good smell. Can you smell that? That was the great cologne experiment of 2004. You should not have gone with the dollar store for that one. Well, you can lose that old car smell by donating your vehicle to one of your favorite causes, like public radio. It only takes a few minutes, and just like that, you've supported this station, and well, you are on your way to a life of better smells.
Go to gpb.org/cars and thanks.
We're back. I didn't get a cue. I was just sitting here kind of reading the Facebook Live posts. Welcome back to Political Rewind. You are really talking up a storm on Facebook Live today. If you're not on it right now, I really encourage you to get on and join the conversation about this whole question of whether Republicans are trying to suppress the vote, whether Stacey Abrams is trying to get undocumented into the polling places. It's interesting. I will say that Ilya, I hope I'm saying your name right, Ilya Smith, says, Kemp goes on Fox, but not Political Rewind. We're at super duper fair and balanced. Thank you. We are. We do try to be super duper fair and balanced. So I wish he would come on the show. Jordan, let's turn to you. As we said at the very top of the show, the polls are open. Early voting has begun, and you came in from Landmark Communications with some numbers to share with us.
So I do want to note that these are mail-in ballots that we have, and it is we have 52,000 who have voted by mail, and I have some demographic breakouts for y'all, and these are numbers as of Friday.
We should point out, we don't know who those people voted for, right? But we have the demographic breakdowns.
I have the demographic breakouts. Right. Correct. So about 23,000 African Americans have voted by mail, and that represents about 44% of the total. And then you have about 1,800 Asians who have come out, and 25,000 whites, and they represent about 48% of the total.
Now, white voters represent 48%
of the numbers that I just read off.
Okay.
And then in comparison to the 2014 election, we had, as of Friday of that 2014, 23,000 who had voted early by mail. In comparison, only 5,000 African Americans came out and voted early by mail, and 17,000 whites came out early by mail. So what you're seeing is an uptick of African Americans who are coming out. This isn't an indicator of what it's going to look like the day of the election, but it is an indicator of how motivated people are and which bases are motivated. Historically, African Americans do tend to vote Democrat.
Jim, so, what do you make of what you heard there?
Well, number one, you've got campaigns emphasizing early voting, and you know all of this talk about whether the machines are reliable or not. I think that's probably having a little bit of effect The question is, of course, are these voters who are these absentee voters who are going to vote anyway?
Yes,
and just do it in another medium, in another fashion.
That's really a great point because, of course, one of the things that Stacey Abrams is banking on, if she hopes to win this election, is expanding the voter base, bringing in new voters. We can't quite tell from the numbers that Jordan gave us.
No, it's going to be about a week before we can crunch those numbers, I think. I think the 19th is the day that the deadline for all the numbers in the Secretary of State's office to be available.
You know, Bill, just by comparison, real quick, I want to re-simplify that for our listeners. They're more than double the number of absentee ballot votes that were in on Friday, more than double what happened in 2016 and in 2014. So this is a real trend when you see a huge number like that. I've got some indication from a couple of my sources that you can look back and track and say that just over 40% of these voters are Democrat, right? And so you see the higher percentage in African American.
They've got voting histories.
And they've got voting histories, so you can look at it and kind of go ahead and predict that they are. And so there's no question that the Democrats are winning early absentee ballot at this point. And I've got some anecdotal evidence of long lines at the early voting locations
today,
all over suburban and urban Atlanta today. So it'll be interesting to hear about our friends in rural Georgia. But there's no question the enthusiasm is up. My Democratic friends are as enthusiastic and as fired up about this election as we've seen probably since 2008.
Caesar, remind me, am I right in remembering that John Ossoff actually won last year's vote when early voting was concerned?
And I think he did.
And he lost it on election night.
On election night is when.
And the historic trend has been that Democrats do better in both absentee ballot and early voting, and then the Republicans have been making it up on election day. And so the Republicans have work to do on getting out the vote.
So I want to ask you, first of all, just a brief announcement. About an hour before we went on the air, the governor and Secretary of State's office announced that voter registration, which the deadline has already passed, but because of the hurricane, they've extended it through tomorrow in Grady, Clay, Turner, and Randolph counties. You have so many other things on your plate right now in those counties, and we know that, but as important as it is to try to get out to vote, you have another day to register
down there. And I will tell you what, it's going to be we're going to have to do a good bit of research to find out whether polling places in those counties will be available. And wouldn't it be ironic, after all the argument over Randolph County, if their polling stations are reduced in any case simply because of the hurricane?
Well, wouldn't it also be ironic if, because of the hurricane, rural voters who would you expect to tend to be more oriented toward voting for Kemp can't get to the polls because of hurricane damage? It's Mother Nature's form of voter suppression, I suppose.
I'm curious. I don't know what voter turnout is in those counties in terms of
those
D's
are a
and
lot
R's.
Of the, a lot of
Randolph is African American.
Yeah. So yeah. Randolph has got a very high African American population, which could be impacted by the hurricane. But the question is, what's the balance in the other case?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We should check that. We'll check that and we'll get it for the next show. You know, I'm interested in another aspect of this, Jordan. Something like in 2016, I think I'm correct, that up to there were 60% of the ballots cast in the 2016 presidential year were early votes. That's a staggering number of votes coming in early.
That is significant, but because it is a presidential election, you can't really compare what's going on now to 2016. That's why I brought the 2014 numbers.
Well, yes, but you can. But what it does tell us is what a commonplace phenomenon early voting has become in the state of Georgia, right?
Right. Correct.
I mean, the behavior and the culture is shifting when it comes to early voting.
So as those, Heath, you're a political consultant. Jordan, you have candidates. Caesar, you've run in campaigns where there's been early vote. How do you adjust a campaign to account for this big potential in early vote? Do you have to adjust what you do? You can't wait till election day anymore. Your timing has changed completely, isn't it?
Absolutely. Right. Statewide is why you're driving up the cost of statewide elections. You have to be on television, on radio, with millions of dollars statewide if you're a statewide candidate. And so that's what's driving up the need for finances. Stacey Abrams has hit records this year. Brian Kemp's going to hit records. The national money pouring into Georgia is going to hit records because you have to be able to sustain your name ID and multiple messages for 5 to 6 weeks. You got to start before early voting starts, and you got to be able to stay up on television all the way through. And it's a $1 million a week kind of minimum to really have that kind of impact in a governor's race. And it really puts local and smaller races at a huge disadvantage because you don't have the resources to be on television for 3 weeks. And so you end up with low information voting right early on, and things happen in the middle of those 3 weeks that could affect votes.
Yeah, so, and I would think, Jordan, if you've got especially if you've got down ballot candidates who are not getting a tremendous amount of, certainly not getting a lot of free media attention, the challenge of how you position them to be recognized to early voters must really be something.
I bet early voters who are coming out this early on in the game have already kind of decided way before, you know, who they're going to vote for. So we do, like he was saying, we do tend to advertise maybe a month or two out to account for it. But I don't think it's a big strategic decision when I'm creating these campaign plans.
Gotcha. If I could add a nonpartisan message.
Yes.
If you want those robocalls to stop, vote early.
You know, I never get any robocalls. I feel kind of lonely.
Do you have a landline?
Do you have a landline? Oh, that's right. I don't use a landline. So, of course, I don't get them.
All right. During election time, our landline, which we really don't use that much, is just ringing off the hook. But one last thing I'll say about early voting. The other thing is, and I haven't thought a lot about this, but, you know, as the numbers start to be revealed and kind of who's voting and how they're voting during this period, that in and of itself, that data in and of itself becomes a campaign issue,
right?
A landmine or a wave to ride. And I think that's something the candidates
are considering. You're getting real-time feedback that can help inform how you plan out the final couple of weeks of your campaign. That's really interesting. All right. You know what? We have such a great staff. You asked questions about the demographics in the counties that have extended voter registration. Mm-hmm. Tom Faust has got it for us. We already said Randolph County, of course, is predominantly African-American, which is one of the reasons when they were looking at closing some polling places, there was some alarm that it was an attempt to suppress the African-American vote. So Turner County, the ethnic composition is it's 55% white, 38% black, 4% Hispanic. Grady County is 59% white, 28% black, 11% basically Hispanic. Clay County is 62% African American, 30% or 29% white, and 5% Hispanic. So it's a mixed bag down there, Jim.
Yeah. And it's I'd like to, my next number that I'm probably going to crunch when I leave here is I'm going to try to figure out how many registered voters are there and what percentage of the statewide electorate is made
in
up
those
of
counties where they were really. But you know what? Just because voting registration was extended in those counties alone doesn't mean that we're not dealing with other areas of the state, Southwest Georgia,
that are also
affected enormously.
Pretty much a wide swath from Bainbridge to Macon, really.
Right.
Yeah, so a lot of folks still without power, right?
Absolutely.
All right. President Trump, by the way, we said at the very beginning of the show, he heads down here. He's supposed to land, I think, around 6 o'clock this evening at Warner Robins Air Force Base. Heath, I think David Perdue is scheduled to be with him. And Melania Trump is coming to your closest good friend and a political leader you work with closely, Johnny Isaacson, not going to be there today?
Johnny's not going to be there today because of conflicts, but he is going to be traveling tomorrow to South Georgia to tour the damage with the governor and potentially with the vice president of the United States. So
you kind of, let's break that news, Heath. The vice president's coming. The president's here today, and you tell us the vice president is now coming in tomorrow.
I'm hearing from our sources the vice president's probably going to be here tomorrow. So I don't know if I'm breaking news or not, but it's out there. And I do think that they'll be looking at other locations where the president didn't get to today. And I'm from South Georgia. I grew up in Albany, so my heart and prayers are going out to all my family and friends down that way. Significant damage. The national media, for whatever reason, hasn't covered this storm the way they've covered the previous storms. But with the kind of magnitude and the power that this storm had and the damage that it did, a lot of it's in rural communities, and I know people were feeling forgotten. And I'm glad to see the president going, and hopefully the vice president, Governor Deal, and Governor Scott are doing a tremendous job with the GEMA and with the Florida Emergency Management. But these folks bringing attention to it are important to getting the resources there to help fix it.
Mm. The governor will. Did we already say the governor's going to be down there?
Yeah, both days, I believe.
as long as we're talking gubernatorial and the fact that the president and vice president are going to look at hurricane damage, Jim, Brian Kemp was down that way on Saturday. He flew in and looked at damage in a number of communities that have been hard hit by the storm. And, you know, it's silly and naive to say, gee, is there a political motivation behind a storm like that? Because it's silly because, of course, there is. You cannot separate politics from the reality of what's happening.
No, look, natural disasters and the rise of and fall of dynasties has been happening for thousands and thousands of years. And this is why everybody was worried about the impact of Puerto Rico on the Trump administration.
Right.
And this is, Katrina and Bush back in what, 2004? And that was a tremendous turning point. Heath's point is, you know, it's knowing that somebody out there is looking after you and looking out for you. And if people don't have that point of view, then you are not one of them. And we should also mention that Stacey Abrams has a bus tour going in that direction.
That's right. She started in Macon, I believe, today, and is heading down that same direction. Okay, so speaking of weekend visits by and activities by the gubernatorial candidates, Jordan, Stacey Abrams this weekend became the first major gubernatorial candidate. First gubernatorial candidate in a major party to ride in the Gay Pride Parade through Midtown Atlanta. What's your take on her having that breakthrough?
I think it's neat, and she's definitely appealing to her base in this situation. And, you know, she took the opportunity, and I don't think there was any issue with it.
Caesar, I wonder. I mean, clearly that's the sort of thing that will endear her to the gay and lesbian community, which is a pretty powerful voting block, an even better financial block. You know, as a guy who ran for mayor of Atlanta, how powerful it can be to make appeals to the LGBTQ community, right? Both for their votes and fundraising.
Yeah, so, well, two things about that. Number one, I was really surprised that made news. And I guess part of me, I'm in the bubble. I think, in my time in office, you went to the Gay Pride parade. You did that. You participated. As a candidate, as an elected official in the city of Atlanta. I mean, major corporations are very involved. I mean, it's a huge employee kind of thing. It's amazing, the energy. So I was surprised that was news. I would not have thought about that, number one. But number two, what I also noticed, I'm not sure how this plays out or how it gets played out, but you see this juxtaposition between Stacey being at the Pride Parade and Kemp, as it was reported, is checking out South Georgia in terms of what happened with the hurricane. That's how that's being played a little bit, and that's really interesting to see that. And
it's really interesting here. Okay, we have Jordan, who's a Republican, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And she thinks it was neat that Stacey Abrams walked in the Gay Pride Parade. Okay, I'm having lunch. I won't tell you where. I'm approached by an older white Democrat. We start who's a former state lawmaker. We start talking politics, and he brings up the topic himself. He says, "I just think it was a mistake. I think it was a mistake for her to go to that pride."
There's no parade. Question he was at the Piedmont Driving Club. Do we have any doubt that that's where this lunch took place?
I will say, at least, it was Cobb County.
Oh, okay. Well,
it was the Country Club Democrats.
Well, that's okay. So, it's interesting. Caesar, first of all, one of the things you said that I think is really interesting is you're comparing Abrams is here, whether it's the Gay Pride Parade or not, she's here in Metro Atlanta looking for votes over the weekend. Kemp's in South Georgia looking for votes. Now, obviously, they're both going to be all over the state. But in some ways, that tells us something about where they see their voting power centers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Among
absolutely.
Other things.
I think that's absolutely right. I think they were both planning on being in these locations, with or without the parade itself. I think that Jordan's a great example of where I think the state of Georgia's headed on this issue. I don't think it's as big of a deal as it might have been 20 or 30 years ago in the state. And I think that the Libertarian wing of the Republican Party, which is growing larger and larger every day is not going to affect the votes kind of either way. I think it motivates her base, but I don't think it's a huge negative, you know, amongst Republican voters, particularly independent voters that are out there.
All right. Let's do this. Let's get another break out of the way. And when we come back, an interesting, not quite sure what to make of it, but an interesting story about David Perdue on the Georgia Tech campus over the weekend. We'll talk about that after these messages.
On the next Fresh Air.
What up, home slices of T-Dope Queens? It's your girl, Phoebs, here.
Phoebe Robinson, stand-up comedian, writer, actress, co-creator, and co-host of the podcast and TV show Two Dope Queens, and co-host of the podcast So Many White Guys. She has a new book titled Everything's Trash, But It's Okay. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 on GPB and GPBnews.org.
We're back on Political Rewind. Jordan Fuchs from Landmark Communications is with us. Cesar Mitchell, Heath Garrett, Jim Galloway. Jim, there was an odd incident on the Georgia Tech campus. Senator David Perdue went to Tech to campaign on behalf of Brian Kemp. And a group of students who identified themselves as, I guess, socialist Democrats, Democratic socialists, whatever, approached him. In the reporting I've seen on it, I haven't seen anything that suggests that they were aggressive in the way that we've been hearing about some people confronting political leaders. Oh, say the way the Tea Party did back in the day, but Republicans don't talk about them. They just talk about the Democratic mob. So one of those students had a cell phone and started recording video of Perdue. Wanted to ask him a question, right?
He wanted to talk about Perdue's support for Brian Kemp and specifically the exact match situation.
Voter suppression.
Right.
And what ensued, apparently, and there's a cell phone video, we'll play you the brief audio right now, was Perdue grabbing the cell phone away from the student. Let's listen.
Hey, so how can you endorse a candidate?
I'm not doing it.
I stole my property.
All right,
Give me my phone back, Senator. That's U.S. Senator David Perdue. U.S. Senator David Perdue just snatched my phone because he won't answer a question to one of his constituents.
So good to see you, my friend.
He's trying to leave. He's trying to leave because he won't answer why he's endorsing a candidate who's trying to purge people from voting on the basis of their race.
What do we say about that kind of stuff?
okay, I'm going to rule Heath Garrett out of this discussion immediately because I would say it's not something you would see Johnny Isaacson.
You'd never see Johnny Isaacson do it. Sam Nunn wouldn't do anything like that. Richard Russell wouldn't have done anything like that.
But I think you put your finger on it before you went to the audio. Is that this is we are. Republicans have decided to be more confrontational when it comes to opposition, I think. I mean, verbally and in this case, just a little bit over. We did call Perdue's office, and the explanation was, well, the senator thought that he was going to that he was being given the phone so he could take a selfie.
A selfie, yeah, yeah.
And then when he found out that wasn't the case, he gave it back.
Cesar, this is kind of an odd incident, and I think the reason there's two reasons why I think it's worth talking about. One is that Perdue had a similar confrontation at National Airport when he was there with his wife, right, and some rather loud protesters came up to him. They were upset about his support of Brett Kavanaugh. I said on the show the day that we talked about that, and when I saw the video, yeah, they were loud. They were in his face, but they didn't threaten him. But Perdue was very concerned because his wife was with him. Yesterday, again, there's this kind of confrontation. But here's why I brought it up. The president has very cleverly started in his rallies talking about the mob, the Democratic mob that's out to get Republicans. And it's very clever, a line of attack moving to the midterms, I think. I don't know there really is a mob out there, but this Perdue incident, we're going to hear about the mob that went after Perdue yesterday.
You know, when I was an elected official, I mean, you know, one of the things that, you know, when you're having a bad day and you got to go out in public, you know, sometimes you take a chill pill before you go out. So you can just, you know, because if you're going to deal with a very difficult or confrontational issue, whether it's at City Hall or in the community, you have to literally put in your brain to kind of be in a certain mode. Because we all are human, quite frankly, and if someone approaches us the wrong way, we might react. But as an elected official, you have to really take that level of repose to a very high
Jordan,
level.
Jordan, do you have to be careful? Do you have to counsel your candidates to sort of take a deep breath and not overreact?
I've never had that discussion with them, no. But in this particular situation, the student was quite clearly baiting him.
Yeah.
And so it was a very normal human reaction. And I think we expect our elected officials to always be these very stoic figures, and they're human.
So he look, I think you're right. There clearly he wanted to record David Perdue being asked about voter suppression, and so that is baiting him in a way. But what, Jordan, what do we have a right to expect of our elected officials, even if we're more aggressive than, you know, you may like? I mean, isn't that feedback from constituents? Don't constituents have a right to confront their elected officials? And I would say this about a Democrat, by the way. This has nothing to do with Perdue as a Republican. I just think they've got to be able to deal with this stuff.
These are folks that are aggressively getting into people's faces and expecting no one to react.
But the Tea Party folks did the same exact thing back in 2010.
And I will tell you, I remember right after... was it the healthcare? Isaacson holding a very, very large town hall over at Kennesaw State, and there was a lot of shouting. There was a lot of give and take. It can be done if you're practiced at it.
Yeah,
that's what I think it is. I would also note that, you know, and I don't know that this was a factor, but the Blue Devils did beat Tech 28-14.
Oh, God. I want to make sure that the real news here, Bill, is that the Democratic Socialists, right, are owning the word socialism on the Georgia Tech campus. And I want to make sure that all my Democratic friends
recognize
that.
Oh, my God, you are so
that.
Predictable.
Get accurate.
But Jim is right. Right. I mean, we're in uncharted territory when it comes to how elected officials interact with the public. There used to be a time when if you're an elected official, you're, you know, in a meeting or in a community meeting and there are these barriers that exist. There were no cell phones and the cell phones were like you could dial on them. Now you can literally take a cell phone and put it in someone's face. As an elected official, that actually is a little bit unnerving.
Sure.
I mean, I'm saying, and I've had that experience. And there have been times when I've thought to myself, you need to get that cell phone out of my face. But now we have to understand that that really is now a form of media. And we've got to get adjusted to it. And I think that training piece is important.
It's another thing you just said is, when you're a city, elected city official, you are going to get people in a way that even a Johnny Isaacson and a David Perdue don't. Your constituents are living with you, you know?
You know,
it's
absolutely
a very different environment.
Absolutely. And they will, you will get cussed out.
And on the comparison of the Tea Party, two wrongs don't make a right. Right. This is what I think the president has right about this is that we saw in the Senate hearings disruption. We saw it on the Senate floor. You had police escorts for these senators down the hallway. That didn't get reported nationally like it would have if they were Democrats. You know, they were threatened.
That got Johnny, reported.
Well, you know, that was not as broadly. Right. So I want to make sure that there's equivalency here. Right. That the president is calling out. Now, you can argue whether or not he should be the one doing that or not. But there's no question these senators are on heightened alert based on the tensions in the last couple of weeks. And the Tea Party never took over the Senate buildings the way that the group did over the last
I got to interrupt
weeks.
Because we're out of time. All I know is that when the next time David Perdue comes to do Political Rewind, I'm going to make everybody put their cell phones in a locker. We're completely out of time for today's show. Jordan Fuchs, thank you for being here. Cesar Mitchell, Heath Garrett, Jim Galloway. Jim and I are going to be looking forward to seeing all of you who are coming to our Atlanta show tonight. And you'll hear what we talked about tomorrow. So take care, everybody, and we'll be back on the radio tomorrow at 2:00.